You're listening to Meeting Pod, the podcast powered by Meeting Place, the premier magazine and news source for the meat and poultry processing industry, and Alt Meat Magazine, the only business information resource for the exploding alternative meat industry.
Welcome. I'm Chris Scott, host of Meeting Pod and contributing editor at Meeting Place and Alt Meat Magazines. Our guest for this episode is a professor at Purdue University, and we'll provide some perspectives on quality assurance, starting from the cattle raising stage to the processing plant. Ron Leminiger is a specialist in not only animal nutrition, but also participated in the development of informational and technological resources to help the beef industry better understand factors that affect overall beef quality. Our discussion today will focus on how beef quality assurance standards are being maintained in today's processing facilities, and how the next generation of meat scientists are being trained to monitor, identify, or correct quality issues across the meat industry. Thanks for joining us on Meeting Pod today, Ron.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here with you, Chris.
Let's start our conversation on where you consider the state of maintaining beef quality standards actually stands within the industry from your perspective. Are processors taking full advantage of the resources and programs designed to help them maintain consistent product quality and food safety, from slaughter to packaging?
Well, I really think that the industry is doing a great job. We've got one of the safest supplies of meat protein anywhere in the world. And so this whole issue of beef quality assurance kind of starts all the way down here at the beginning of the production chain. So that would be the cow-calf producer. We have a national beef quality assurance training program that can either be done in face-to-face or online. And it basically covers the live animal side of production chain. So it has animal handling and well-being, nutrition, health, and judicious use of antibiotics, and worker safety, and soil health, and carbon footprint, and methane emissions. In that program, you know, we have training and certification for cow-calf producers, backgrounding stocker operators, which would be kind of the next segment of the chain, then the feedlot. And then we've got also some training for those folks that do our transporting of livestock, you know, from farm to feedlot or feedlot to processing plant. And so I think on that live animal side, I think we've done a really, really good job as an industry of bringing our producers up to speed on some things that may be not top center, you know, in their thought processes every minute of the day. But I think we're doing a good job. And I think our processors, you know, with inspection programs and HACCP, which is that hazardous analysis critical control point issues, I think that they're doing an excellent job as well.
Now, your research and expertise is focused on ruminant nutrition and management, and your current program at Purdue outlines the connection between nutrition and management that ultimately affects beef marbling and tenderness. What do you as a researcher see as the next phase in terms of raising cattle that produce the highest quality products for consumers?
Well, I think it begins with the genetics. And I think, you know, as you look across the genetic trend lines for most of our major breeds in this country, we have increased marbling, we've decreased back fat. And so those two are going to be major contributors to quality grade. Okay, so that USDA choice and prime. And then on the back fat side and the muscling side becomes those factors that we incorporated into the yield grade component. And I think, you know, we're producing a leaner product that has more marbling. So that should translate to more juiciness, flavor, and tenderness in our end product. So it begins there. And now the next phase of that becomes kind of, how do you feed those animals and how do you manage those animals to allow them to express that genetic potential? And one of the things that we're learning more and more about is how that fetus in utero, okay, so the calf that ultimately is going to be born to a particular cow, mm-hmm. How we feed and manage that cow also has an effect on marbling deposition, muscle growth, reproductive function, and immune function, and all of those things. And so if we continue to explore how cow responds to different nutrition and management systems. It basically changes not the DNA, not the genome, all right? Mm-hmm. But what it does is it alters how the genes are expressed, what we call fetal programming, okay? So that would be the calf inside the uterus, but also this lactational programming, okay? And composition of the milk has an effect on animal health, you know, throughout its lifetime, for example, okay? Or reproductive responses, or how much muscle that animal has. And so we're learning a lot more about that part, okay, that I think is going to make a huge difference in the quality of the product that we produce on an increasing level.
Now, that sounds very challenging if you're getting to the genetic stage, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And so you kind of talk about, you know, that being an epigenetics, all mm-hmm. right, how the environment affects the animal's ability to express its genetic potential. And so, yeah, it's a fascinating area. And this goes back a long time ago in humans, okay, when there was a famine in Europe, all right, and they looked at how the mother, okay, was affected by the famine. But those ladies that were pregnant during that time frame, okay, how their offspring responded to basically a normal plane of nutrition after the fact, right? And so we saw a lot of things that where mom was deprived of nutrients because of the famine, those individuals that were born, okay, coming out of that, were more prone to diabetes and obesity and heart disease and a number of different maladies, okay, that kind of moved us down that path. And, you know, so it's resurrecting some old interesting information, all right, and now trying to apply it to the animal world.
Now, the extension program at Purdue offers several quality assurance options for students who are interested in this area of meat production. Now, remembering that we'll return to the educational aspects of your experience, what are some of the QA offerings that generate the most interest among students right now?
Well, I think that one of the real big issues is this whole area of meat and muscle biology. So the kind of the meat science side, you know, and these kids come into college, and that's, of course, where I'm at. They come into college, and I don't think that they have really thought much about the meat side of the industry coming in. But if you've got good instructors and you've got good course material, you know, once these students are exposed to it, there's a number of those students that say, hey, you know, this is an area that is very intriguing, okay, and has a lot of job opportunities, okay? So there is a number of career opportunities in the meat science segment. And quite honestly, historically, we've probably been a little bit short as an industry in getting those kids trained. And I think we, at least here at Purdue, are really emphasizing that piece. And the students are responding to that and getting really nice career opportunities.
It sounds like that timing is perfect for them, too, because that's when you should start thinking about other options versus what you thought maybe even 2 years earlier.
You bet. You know, and college is one of those things, you know, that a lot of our incoming students think that they want to be a veterinarian. That's kind of what they're geared towards, you know, as their first career coming into the university. And once they get here, it's nice to see these kids say, okay, you know, now I've been exposed to the meats area, or I've been exposed to the genetics area, or the nutrition, or the reproduction. And all of a sudden, there's a lot of other career opportunities beyond the vet school. Okay. And I don't discourage our students from vet school, right. But I also try to make sure that they understand that there are other things, and really boils down to, and I'll use myself as an example of that. When I went to college, that's what I thought I wanted to do too. And as I went through the undergraduate program, several disciplines, in my case, it was nutrition and reproduction. And I found out that I could go to graduate school instead of vet school. I could focus. My passion was on the beef side. And I really boiled it down to two things. One of them was my passion for the beef industry and my passion for working with people, finding solutions. And a veterinarian can do that. All right. Once you boil it down and blow all the chaff away, there's a lot of career opportunities. And what our students are finding is that at least a percentage of our students are finding out that the meat industry is a pretty nice career path.
Yeah, and that word exposure is kind of the vital piece of that, definitely. Let's take a quick break for a word from the sponsor of today's episode, Florida Food Products.
Today's podcast is brought to you by FFP. FFP, the largest provider of clean label cures for the protein sector, is making it easier to swap out synthetic additives with consumer-preferred natural ingredients. Protect your meat applications the natural way with FFP's latest breakthrough ingredient, Vegetable Secure, a celery-based natural antimicrobial that outperforms synthetics with no sensory impact, or with its multi-patented Vegetable Plus, a phosphate replacement made from rice bran extract. Go natural at floridafood.com. Now back to the podcast.
And we're back. Let's take a look at the meat industry practices these days, Ron. Can you briefly describe the transition from or advances toward food quality and safety, say a decade or so ago, compared with current practices and standards? And have you seen any notable differences between beef processors, for example, and poultry processors?
I think some of the changes that has taken place that have been really positive is, you know, things like adding hot carcass washes and then using, you know, organic acids like citric acid, you know, to wash these carcasses to minimize microbial growth on surface of those carcasses, right? Mm-hmm. And then we've got a lot of what we call hazardous analysis critical control points in a processing plant that kind of are in place to minimize any potential contamination of or cross-contamination of one carcass to another or one cut of meat to another. I think one of our real challenge areas has always been, you know, the hamburger product, okay? Because, you know, a consumer can take home a steak and they could, to the rare degree of cooking, right? And it's a very safe product because what you've done is you've heated the two surfaces, the top, the bottom, and the sides, right?
Right.
And you know, like E. coli, for example, will not penetrate down into that muscle, right? So if I just sear the surfaces, I'm good. But when you got a product like hamburger, all right, what was on the outside now can become part of the inside, okay, when you grind it and those kinds of things. And so, you know, we've still got a lot of control point interventions, all right? But I think consumer still needs to be educated to the point that, you know, if you're going to take a hamburger product or you're going to take maybe a steak that might be blade tenderized, those are probably the two places that are maybe the most vulnerable. And I think it's real simple for the consumer. Just make sure that you bring it up to the right temperature for a hamburger product or, you know, a blade tenderized steak. And anything that might have been there will have been heat stable or heat sensitive and will be destroyed. And so we have a responsibility on the production and the processing side. But I think the consumer on the dinner plate side has a responsibility to make sure that it's delivered to the dinner plate in the correct cooked fashion.
Absolutely. Now, when it comes to maintaining or improving quality assurance protocols at meat plants today, in light of recent business challenges like COVID, what kind of advice would you offer companies in terms of what they can do to improve their track records?
I think we're doing as good a job as we can with the technology that we have. And I think we still have the safest product of anywhere in the world. And so I think that is an accolade for the meat industry in the United States. I think we've got a very robust beef quality assurance program, both on the production animal side and then, of course, the HACCP side with federal inspectors in the plant that are taking swab samples and monitoring cleanliness and sanitation procedures and all of those kinds of things. Till we get maybe some additional technologies, I don't know that there's anything that we're not doing that we should be doing.
Until those technologies are developed, of course.
Yeah, right.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, let's take another quick look at the students involved in the programs offered at Purdue. We've already talked about exposure. Are there specific qualities or interests among the students these days that may be driving them toward the quality assurance end of the meat business versus other options of ag study?
You know, that's a great question. And I guess I think that, you know, the qualities everybody likes to eat, right? And so, and everybody is concerned about food safety, and food safety can never be compromised, okay? We can't compromise that for our consumers. It is the top priority, all right? Quality, you know, as it relates to tenderness, juiciness, and flavor, and all of those kinds of things are important. But without food safety, we don't have an industry.
Right.
And so I think our students are looking at that and saying, okay, I like to eat. I like a safe product. And there's good paying jobs that are available, you know, in the meat industry. And once they're exposed to that side of our production chain, you know, there are a number of students that kind of like that aspect. I think if you're thinking about quality or quality attributes, to be successful and to enjoy your career, I think you've got to be passionate about it. And so we do have, you know, some of our students that go through maybe a meats judging class, okay, or, you know, an animal evaluation classes where, you know, we looked at the animal in a live form and then we follow it through on the carcass side. I think that there's a number of our students that like that side. And, you know, if they've got a passion for that part of the industry, I think that kind of drives them in that direction. You got to have the courses that are interesting to the student, and you got to have instructors that also have that passion for the industry as well, because I think it's contagious.
Absolutely. And they have to be flexible themselves, the instructors, to produce something that's going to inspire the students as well.
One other point in all of this is I think, you know, a combination of getting some experience, okay, so it's kind of a classroom, okay, understanding kind of the science of the muscle, okay, and,
right,
and you know, how it progresses through its various stages to become tender and juicy and flavorful, you know, from a product standpoint. But I think it's also important for the students to be able to get some, I'm going to call experiential learning, some hands-on. How do I fabricate this carcass? How do I hang it in the cooler? How do I dry age it, okay, for increased tenderness, you know, or vacuum pack and not freeze? And so I've got a wet aging process, okay? And understanding the biology behind all of that, I think makes the skill set, okay, that you learn with your hands really mesh together very, very well.
And I think that's going to open some more doors for the students who are still unsure which direction they want to take their careers once they're in school.
You bet. And, you know, one could ask, well, do you just the formal schooling, or do you do, you know, just the hands-on? And I think it's really a combination. And I guess it depends on what your passion is, you know, of what area of the meat industry are you wanting to be in. If you want to be in quality control, then I think you have to go through kind of that formal education process. If you really want to become that skilled labor, okay, where you are actually doing the fabrication of those cuts and breaking that carcass down, then having some understanding of the basics, okay, of that would come from the academic side, but it really more is a hand skill set.
Right.
And so I think that there's places for both the junior college graduate or the college graduate or the one that wants to just leave high school and become a skilled labor, right? And those jobs exist, and, you know, depending on where you're at on the processing line, some of those jobs pay very, very well.
Absolutely. And that bleeds right into my next question, because many QA programs involve certifications once the meat industry employees are already on the job. What would you suggest are the most efficient ways that people that are interested in improving their skill sets should launch? For example, is going back to school the better option versus picking up and learning skills or techniques on the job, in your opinion? And what type of person might do better in a formal school setting compared with on-the-job experience as you've seen it?
You know, in terms of going back to school, I always look at education as being something that nobody can take away from you. And you've got it. How you choose to use that education, okay, is kind of driven by what career path you choose and how you choose to lead your life, right? But the academic part, of at least some basic understanding, is probably a positive. And I will say that, you know, a lot of places in the industry, they will do on-job training, right?
Right.
To get you prepared for what they're asking you to do or what you've agreed to do for them, right? And so I think, You know, you could get it either in a formal way at a junior college or a four-year college, get enough of the basics to be able to do that, you know, with on-the-job training, okay? And then, of course, the hands-on, you know, repetition is what's going to make you really skilled as a meat cutter, for example, right? And so I think, you know, a combination of, I'll say, a classroom type of training plus the experiential learning where you're doing it with your hands and you're thinking about the process, I think is good. And it depends a little bit on in which direction you want to go. And as I mentioned before, if you're really interested in quality control, I think maybe the more formal education is probably desirable there. If you're more interested in the fabrication side, you know, then I think maybe the hands-on skill sets become the driver.
Absolutely. And finally, what would you identify as the most satisfying aspect of your career as a researcher, industry observer, and professor? And what are some of the qualities the people who are on their way to turning toward quality assurance as a career should have?
Well, let's take the first question first in terms of what's been most satisfying in my career. And as I kind of mentioned a little bit earlier, I had a passion for the cattle industry, and I have a passion for working with people. That really easily boils down to what gives me the most satisfaction is helping people succeed. I've incorporated that into my research component because all of my research is application oriented. I want to be able to take it directly to the end user and help them solve a problem that they have. And whether they know it's a problem, okay, so you're always anticipating, okay, what are the next challenges for our producers, what are the next challenges for our processors? And so I think helping people succeed is probably the thing that really drives my research teaching and extension program. The second part of the question, okay, is what qualities do people need to have? And I think you need to develop a passion. And if you have a passion for what you do, then you never have to work a day in your life. It becomes fun to get up and go to work in the morning. For me, I would not be able to work, you know, in a factory, all right, where I put the same part on the same piece of equipment repetitively for 8 or 10 hours a day. That would not be satisfying for me. That works for some people. So you have to decide what is your passion and want to be able to get up in the morning and go to work. Okay. The next pieces I think that are really critical that I would like to, you know, instill upon our younger generation is that you need to develop a good work ethic, all right? You need to show up on time. You need to do those things. You need to, you know, do your job and do it better. I think interpersonal skills is huge in this business, right? It's relationships. Working with people.
Communication.
You know, absolutely. I think that that is critical. Honesty, integrity are other pieces of the strategy for success. That's my short list.
That works. That work not just for meat processing and quality assurance, but also in life. I want to thank Dr. Ron Leminiger of Purdue University for his insights on quality assurance protocols, his experience in the field and in a university setting, and his research aimed at helping the meat industry provide the best product to consumers and customers alike. Thanks also to Florida Food Products for sponsoring today's Meeting Pod episode. And of course, thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. That's a wrap. Until next time.
Remember to tune in on Mondays to get the inside track on the people and the processes that drive the protein industry. Be sure to subscribe to Meeting Pod on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow Meeting Place and Alt Meat Magazines on social media, and be sure to visit our websites at meetingplace.com and altmeat.net.